Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 328, Connections Between the Iran-Contra Scandal and Covert Action of the 1980s and the Terrorist Blitzkrieg of 9/11/2001. This is being recorded on September 23rd of 2001. There's a term in the intelligence community called blowback. It basically alludes to, or it means, unintended negative consequences of intelligence operations. To make a very, very long story very, very short, the element that I believe was involved at the operational level of the terrorist blitzkrieg of 9/11/2001, and this is at the operational level, would involve, among other things, elements that were at one time or another utilized by U.S. intelligence against the former Soviet Union, but which were equally and perhaps even more virulently opposed to the United States. We incorporated elements of the Nazi intelligence system, including the Reinhard-Gehlen spy outfit, and underlying that, the Heinrich Mueller intelligence outfit for the Bormann Organization at the end of World War II. And we also, later, in addition to utilizing the Nazis against the former Soviet Union, we utilized Islamic fundamentalists against the former Soviet Union, in particular in the covert operation that took place in Afghanistan. Not only as was the case with Osama bin Laden, but also with Ramzi Youssef, and also with Sheikh Rahman, the latter two convicted in connection with the first attack on the World Trade Center bombing. Their genesis as warriors took place in the 1980s as part of the U.S. covert operation in Afghanistan against the former Soviet Union. We're going to take a look at some of the operational, we're going to take a look at some of the connections between the milieu of the 9/11/2001 attack and also the milieu of the Iran-Contra affair and the U.S. covert operation against the Soviets in Afghanistan. And bear in mind that it was in that conflict that the elements that exploded apparently on the 9/11/2001 were connected with, well, the genesis of bin Laden and Sheikh Rahman and Ramzi Youssef took place with the in the covert action against the former Soviet Union. And bear in mind that there are also, as we've seen in a number of broadcasts, connections between reactionary elements of Islam and some elements of what I call the Underground Reich, notably, for example, Haji Amin al-Husseini, a major in the SS, key Axis spy, and the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, an individual whose activities range from the former Soviet Union to the Balkans to the Middle East. We're going to take a look now at an article that comes from The Guardian. Research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from The Guardian's issue of, that's a British paper, by the way, September 15th of 2001. You can visit their website at www.guardian.co.uk. This is called Blowback Chronicles. It's by Giles Foden, and it's on some of the connections between the Afghan covert operation and the elements that apparently were involved in the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And again, from The Guardian of 9/15/2001, research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. Now take a look and pay close attention in particular at the role of people like bin Laden in the Afghan covert operation. Take a look at links between the Iran-Contra affair, British intelligence, and the milieu of the Afghan operation, and consider that the Iran-Contra affair, just like the arming of Iraq or Iraqgate, were accomplished by the elder George Bush, utilizing the interagency governmental networks created pursuant to the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism. Giles Foden's Blowback Chronicles reads in part, "During the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan, U.S. officials passed billions in funding and training to the Mujahideen. The CIA in particular, while under the direction of William Casey, head of the agency during the Reagan administration, was the main manager of these operations. With the Russian withdrawal in 1989, the CIA, quote, celebrated its victory with champagne, unquote. So says Unholy Wars, Afghanistan, America, and International Terrorism, published by the Pluto Press. The definitive account by ABC journalist John Cooley. The celebrations under the presidency of George Bush Sr., himself a former CIA director, were premature. The sophisticated methods taught to the Mujahideen and the thousands of tons of arms supplied to them by the U.S. and Britain are now tormenting the West in the phenomenon known as blowback, whereby a policy strategy rebounds on its own devisers. The sins of the father, it might well be said, are being heaped on the head of the son. And again, I believe that, like elements of the Nazi intelligence apparatus and the underground Reich, I believe that elements of some of these reactionary Islamic forces are in fact being coordinated by the underground Reich against the United States, and that again the dominant element in the events of 9/11/2001, one which subverted our own intelligence service, I believe, intelligence services, to, I believe, is in fact a fifth column located, among other places, within our own intelligence services, not operating through channels not the government as such, but operating through and controlling channels through which the government operates. Skipping down, more about the Afghan covert operation and operational links here with some front companies that were utilized by British intelligence in the Iran-Contra affair, along with Oliver North. Like the covert British and American teams in Afghanistan, many of which received dollar-for-dollar funding from the Saudi royal family, bin Laden arrived in Afghanistan directly after the Soviet invasion in 1979. Note that the bin Laden family is very close to King Ibn Saud, the founder of Saudi Arabia, and that the elder George Bush is also very close to the Saudi royal family and was, in fact, in touch with them during the campaign of 2000 under the auspices of the Carlyle Group, as we looked at in For the Record Program 284. Continuing. Everyone was getting along famously, according to Cooley. Quote, delighted by his impeccable Saudi credentials, the CIA gave Osama free rein in Afghanistan, as did Pakistan's intelligence generals, unquote. In Ken Connor's Ghost Force, The Secret History of the SAS, published by Orion, it is claimed that the elite SAS regiment actually trained Afghan fighters in remote locations in Scotland. In Afghanistan itself, the services of Keeney Meany Services were used. This was an offshoot of British security firm Control Risks, mainly comprising ex-SAS members and former members of Rhodesian and South African special forces. It took its name from the Swahili word for the movement of a snake through grass. Keeney Meany Services later played a role in the Oliver North Iran-Contra affair of 1987. And skipping down, talking about the training of Afghan fighters at Camp Perry in Virginia. At the farm, that's the nickname for Camp Perry, and other secret camps, young Afghans and Arab nationals from countries such as Egypt and Jordan learned strategic sabotage skills. Passed down to the younger jihad generation, which filled the ranks of the bin Laden organization, these skills would come back to haunt the U.S. Simon Reeves' The New Jackals, Ramzi Youssef, Osama bin Laden and the Future of Terrorism, published by Deutsch, looks at how they were applied at the time of the 1993 attack on the World Trade Center and the 1998 embassy bombings in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam. In the financial world, too, there is a blowback scenario, given that for years global banking has gained considerable benefits from the lack of transparency and regulation. BCCI, the British-Pakistani bank that was closed down in 1991 after a massive fraud, was a regular route for Mujahideen funding, including that provided by Saudi intelligence. Financing for Pentagon and the CIA black budget operations, particularly in the era of William Casey, also passed through BCCI, as did drug money. Some analysts claim black budget U.S. and British operatives flew out opium on the planes with which they brought in arms. Later, jihad funding came from the construction industry coffers of Osama bin Laden and other Muslim, quote, philanthropists, unquote. Bin Laden established his own bank, the Al-Shamal Islamic, in Khartoum. In Unholy Wars, Cooley provides convincing evidence that Arab businessman and arms merchant Adnan Khashoggi had dealings with Osama bin Laden's father, receiving a $50,000 check from him. Oil broker Roy Fermark, Cooley says, provided a link between his CIA friend Casey and Khashoggi, introducing the latter to Manuchehr Ghorbanifar, the Iranian middleman who became a central figure in the arms for hostages and funds for Contras deals with Iran in which Khashoggi got involved. note here allegations of connections between the Bin Laden family and Iran-Contra kingpin Adnan Khashoggi. Also links between that milieu and the milieu of Manuchehr Ghabbanafar, the Iranian national who was utilized as one of the middlemen in the Iran-Contra arms transfers. I will note here also that oil itself appears to be a major element in the events going down in Afghanistan. And this concerns allegations that there's a plan to put an oil pipeline across Afghanistan. By that time, in this high-stakes game of snakes and ladders, Clinton's successor was effectively already in the picture as the son of a man with close ties to the oil company Unocal, which wanted to put a pipeline across Afghanistan. Among their partners in the venture were British Petroleum and the Saudi royal family. One of the major institutions that I think deserves scrutiny in connection with possible links between the milieu of the Afghan support effort, which again spawned Osama bin Laden and Ramzi Youssef and Sheikh Rahman, all of whom involved either in the devastating attack of September of 2001 or the previous bombing of the World Trade Center, is an institution called the World Muslim Congress. We've discussed this in some of our past discussions with Kevin Coogan, the brilliant author of the book Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yaqui and the Post-War Fascist International. The World Muslim Congress was founded by Haji Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement, a major in the SS, and a key Axis spy, also a key operative on behalf of the Underground Reich in the post-World War II world. We've taken a look at Haji Amin al-Husseini in numerous broadcasts, including our RFA number 22 and For the Record program number 293. Now, as you listen to the following account, not only of the World Muslim Congress, an institution which maintained a number of links to U.S. intelligence, pay attention to the links between the World Muslim Congress, the Institute for Historical Review, the key Holocaust denial institution. Take a look at the links here between the Grand Mufti, the essential founder of the World Muslim Congress, and note also the links between the World Muslim Congress, the Saudi Arabian royal family, which in turn have very strong connections to the Bin Laden family and to the Bush family, the King of Saudi Arabia in touch with the elder George Bush during the campaign, as I said, and also in recent contact with the elder George Bush on behalf of George the Younger. Note also the Saudi Arabian government's retaining of the services of an American neo-Nazi named William Grimstead as a Washington lobbyist. Note also the World Muslim Congress's connections to Pakistan. And note the very important role that the World Muslim Congress, an organization which I think could very properly be called a fascist element within Islam, look at the role it played in the Afghan support effort. We're going to turn now to a book that we've used many times in the past. It's called The Beast Reawakens by Martin A. Lee. That's published in hardcover by Little Brown and Company. Copyright 1997, ISBN number 0-316-91959-6. Of the World Muslim Congress and the Afghan support effort, we read, another favorite Institute for Historical Review speaker and collaborator was Issa Naqley of the World Muslim Congress, or WMC. Based in Pakistan, the WMC was initially headed by the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who, like his friend H. Keith Thompson, stood by the Third Reich until his death in 1974. A few years later, the World Muslim Congress, then headed by Pakistani Dr. Inamullah Khan, mailed Holocaust denial literature to every member of the U.S. Congress and the British Parliament. The WMC's official mouthpiece, Muslim World, carried ads for the Protocols of the Elders of Zion and Henry Ford's The International Jew. Dr. Khan's Congress also published Freemasonry, a book warning that Jews were using lodge members to extend secret control over religion and society, a paranoid theory that has long been popular among Liberty Lobby supporters and neo-Nazi groups around the world. Acknowledging their political kinship, WMC Secretary General Khan sent a letter to the Spotlight praising its, quote, superb in-depth analysis, unquote, and stating that the paper deserved, quote, the thanks of all right-minded people, unquote. Dr. Khan also served as an advisor to the Saudi Arabian royal family, which lavished funds on the World Muslim Congress. In addition, The Saudi Arabian government retained the services of American neo-Nazi William Grimstead as a Washington lobbyist. Like many European neo-fascist groups, the WMC adopted a third-position stance toward the superpowers, as demonstrated by this headline from Muslim World. U.S. and USSR both serve Zionist interests. But Khan tempered his anti-American tirades when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan in 1979. Soon, the World Muslim Congress began working closely with U.S. intelligence and Pakistani military officials who were covertly supporting the Afghan Mujahideen in their fight against the Soviet-installed regime in Kabul. This effort was strongly endorsed by Dr. Khan, who served for many years as the Pakistani representative of the Nazi-infested World Anti-Communist League, which played an important role in the Reagan administration's secret war in the Golden Crescent. So again, note the explicitly fascist nature of the World Muslim Congress, a key vehicle in the Golden Crescent, again, for the Afghan support effort that spawned bin Laden, Sheikh Rahman, and Ramzi Youssef. Also note in the Guardian article that we looked at earlier, note the role of the BCCI in this intelligence nexus. The Bush Justice Department insider who covered up the BCCI investigation, Robert Mueller, is now head of the FBI, having been appointed head of the FBI in early July. And the BCCI investigation would ultimately have gone to, among others, James R. Bath, although not formally affiliated with the institution, and, of course, James R. Bath, a Texas business representative for the bin Laden family and an investor in Arbusto Energy. Yet another link between the Iran-Contra affair and the milieu implicated in the bombings of the... another possible link concerns a fellow named Imad Mughnaya. That is the link between the Iran-Contra affair and also the 9/11-2001 terrorist blitzkrieg. San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, September 21st of 2001 contained a London Independent article by Chris Blackhurst. Its headline, Two New Names Surface as September 11th Ringleaders. Israelis cite Hezbollah official and bin Laden aide. And skipping down about Imad Mughnaya. Mughnaya is wanted by several governments, and the United States has put a $2 million reward on his head. He is wanted in connection with a series of incidents, including the kidnap and murder, said to have been by his own hands, of Beirut CIA chief William Buckley, and the abduction and seven-year confinement of U.S. journalist Terry Anderson in the mid-1980s. Of course, it was the kidnapping of William Buckley that led to the Iranian transfers, arms transfers, and the Iran-Contra affair. Furthermore, there are alleged links between Imad Mughnaya and two bombings in Argentina. Skipping down, we read, the bombings of the Israeli embassy in Argentina in 1992 and of a Jewish center in Buenos Aires 2 years later have been attributed by Western authorities to Mughnaya. As we've looked at in the past, one of the principal figures involved in the Iran-Contra affair was Manzer El-Kassar. He was also deeply involved with BCCI and with the Achille Lauro hijacking and apparently with the bombing of Pan Am 103. Credited by the DEA with bringing roughly 20% of the heroin into the United States, he was the prime operative who operated on behalf of the elder George Bush in connection with the Iran-Contra affair. And his name also surfaced in connection with the AMIA bombings, a bombing and the bombing of the Israeli embassy. Both of those bombings linked, at least in that article, allegedly to Imad Mughnaya. There are connections between Manzer El-Kassar and those bombings as well. We're going to revisit a short section of For the Record program number 109, recorded in September of 1998.
As I mentioned, Manzer El-Kassar's name has come up in connection with a couple of key bombings in Argentina in recent years, the bombing of the Israeli embassy in 1992. You heard an allusion to that in the first of the Clarín articles that I read in this segment, and also an AMIA, the bombing of the AMIA Cultural Center in July of 1994. More about those allegations and research and translation credit on the following goes to Dave White, who got this from Clarín's issue of August 2nd of 1998. This is an article entitled, Government Worried About Visit of Al-Kassar. The article reads in part, lawyers for Manzer El-Kassar have confirmed a statement from the Argentinian embassy in Damascus that their client will come to Argentina on Friday, August 7th. Al-Kassar's visit has three objectives: to end the lawsuit in which he is charged by Judge Jorge Ballesteros with fraudulently obtaining an Argentinian passport in 1992, to deny a witness's declaration that he'd visited Buenos Aires on or about July 18, 1994, the day of the AMIA bombing, and to clear up suspicions that he'd supplied the 200 kilos of exogene used to blow up the Israeli embassy on March 17, 1992. The exogene, according to an incomplete investigation by Swiss prosecutor Laurent Caspar Ansermont, arrived from Syria shortly before the attack on the embassy and was purchased by a company owned by El Kassar. And continuing with the story, furthermore, Al Kassar has admitted having ties to pro-Iranian groups like Hezbollah in Lebanon. Indeed, it was Manzer Al Kassar, according to John Loftus, the aforementioned co-author along with Mark Ahrens of the landmark book The Secret War Against the Jews, that Manzer Al Kassar was not only the key man for the Contra support team in getting East Bloc arms for the Contras, but was also the key player in securing American arms for the Iranians in the Iranian leg, so to speak, of the Iran-Contra affair. And again, this individual, credited by the DEA with bringing 20% of the heroin into the United States each year, was on the White House payroll. Continuing, on the White House payroll under the Reagan and Bush administrations, I should say. Continuing, government officials fear that while Al Kassar is improving his image, he will be damaging the image of the president. Actually, I should say he was actually on the White House payroll under the Reagan administrations. George Bush, however, did continue to protect him. He probably wasn't literally on the White House payroll at that point, but he was a key player in the Iran-Contra affair, the key player, according to Loftus and Ahrens. Continuing. Furthermore, Al Kassar has admitted having ties to pro-Iranian groups like Hezbollah in Lebanon. Government officials fear that while Al Kassar is improving his image, he will be damaging the image of the president. In addition, Al Kassar's presence could again push forward the Syrian trail to the two biggest terrorist attacks in Argentine history. The Syrian trail is the theory of Judge Juan José Galeano. It supposes the existence of support by Syrian sectors, along with pro-Iranian groups, in setting up the attacks. The key to explaining part of the origin of the attacks is understanding the complete scheme of powerful persons, the complex scheme of powerful persons close to President Menem. Al Kassar was born in Yabrud, Syria, that's Y-A-B-R-U-D, a few meters from the home of the family of Menem's ex-wife, Zulima Yoma. Al Kassar's friend Ibrahim al-Ibrahim, a Syrian intelligence agent, moved to Argentina in 1987. He married Zulima's sister, Amira, and was assigned to a key customs post at Aziza Airport. Franco Caviglia, whom Al Kassar is suing, maintains that al-Ibrahim was on duty when the exogene shipment arrived. At that time, the airport warehouses were controlled by Alfredo Yabron, who was also from Yabrud, Syria. Yabron had planned to flee to Damascus before his suicide on May 20th. So again, there is an allegation here, a hotly disputed and apparently the subject of litigation by Manzer Al Kassar, that Manzer Al Kassar brought the exogene that was used to blow up the Israeli embassy in March of 1992. There's also an allegation that Manzer Al Kassar had visited Buenos Aires on or about July 18, 1994, the site of the day of the AMIA bombing. And note that the airport warehouses where Al Kassar allegedly brought the exogene into were controlled by the aforementioned Alfredo Yabron, an individual connected to a former justice minister, as well as an individual closely connected to Manzer Al Kassar. Alfredo Yabron, also an individual who had, before his, quote, suicide, unquote, more connections than a switchboard, and we're going to take a look at this particular tangled web in just a couple of minutes. More about that particular tangled web, I should say, in just a couple of minutes. I'm going to review an article that we touched on in a couple of half-hour segments, updating numerous terror connections that had been discussed on this program over the years. This comes from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency, and this is on the website of the Jewish Bulletin of Northern California. Again, this is a Jewish Telegraphic Agency story, Dateline Buenos Aires, headlined Syrian Linked to Bombings. It's dated June 21st of 1996. The article reads in part, A Swiss court investigating an illegal sale of explosives may have found an important clue in two unresolved bombings in Argentina. The Swiss are probing a shipment of several tons of the high-explosive Exogen, according to Spanish journalist Norberto Bermudez. The firm Expel manufactures the explosive in Spain. Most of the shipment in question was sent to Croatia, but a fraction was rerouted to Argentina shortly before the March 17, 1992 bombing of the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires. Exogen may have been used in that attack, which left 29 dead and some 100 wounded. Bermudez, who came to Buenos Aires to deliver a copy of the Swiss findings to the Argentine court investigating the case, said that, quote, the Exogen passed customs at the city's Ezeiza airport. Also, Exogen may have been used in the July 18, 1994 bombing of the AMIA Jewish Community Center that left 86 dead and at least 300 wounded. Swiss investigators said the explosives were sold by Syrian arms dealer Manzer El-Kassar. So the allegation has been lodged by Swiss investigators that the explosives used in the AMIA bombing also came from Manzer El-Kassar, who allegedly brought in the explosives for the bombing of the Israeli embassy in March of 1992. The AMIA bombing is an incident that I discussed at the time. I would note that a couple of German nationals were briefly detained and then released. There are very strong connections by what I have termed the Underground Reich, the residua of the Third Reich, which have continued to function intact to a large extent in the post-World War II period, as discussed in, among other books, The Beast Reawakens, a vitally important recent work by Martin A. Lee. There are strong connections between fascist terrorists around the world and what I have termed the Underground Reich, and some of the more extreme groups in the Middle East as well. Those associations going back to the World War II period, when individuals such as Haji Amin al-Husseini, the self-proclaimed Grand Mufti of Jerusalem and the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement, also a major in the SS, was a key player on behalf of Third Reich espionage. He also recruited Muslims to the Nazi cause, including a couple of Bosnian Muslim, or a Bosnian Muslim Waffen SS division, the Hanjar division, that numbered among its ranks Alija Izbegović, the first president of Bosnia, and the president of Bosnia when U.S. troops were sent in to support his regime. The AMIA bombing of a Jewish cultural center, which had also been a repository for documentation concerning Nazi war criminals who had fled to Argentina, was the target, again, of a huge bombing in July of 1994, specifically on July 18th of 1994. And in addition to the allegations concerning a possible Manzer El-Kassar connection to that case, there is an evidentiary tributary, I should say, running in the direction of an Argentinian intelligence official who not only gave testimony about the AMIA bombing, but who also apparently had functioned along with Manzer El-Kassar and company in some of the aspects of the Contra support effort. Research and translation credit on the following also goes to Dave White. The following comes from Clarín, once again, the Argentinian paper, and this comes from Clarín's issue of August 9th of 1998. This is headlined, Former Spy Released from Jail After 34 Days. And this concerns a former Argentine intelligence agent named Leonardo Sanchez Reissa, R-E-I-S-S-E. Leonardo Sanchez Reissa, a former intelligence agent arrested July 1st in connection with a 1987 Buenos Aires art gallery heist, has been freed by Judge Alejandro Rodenas because of insufficient evidence. Sanchez Reissa testified to Judge Juan Jose Galeano about the relationship of the Iranian company South Beef with the financing of the AMIA bombing. A few days later, he was arrested in Rosario. In addition, Sanchez Reissa stated that he had collaborated with the CIA and the DEA. So again, one of the individuals who had testified before Judge Galeano about the AMIA bombing and who claims associations with CIA and DEA was a former Argentinian intelligence agent named Leonardo Sanchez Reissa, and I'm not sure about the pronunciation on that. And Reissa was also one of the many people who figured in the Argentinian element that helped to train the Contra guerrillas who were fighting against the Sandinistas. Of course, the clandestine American support for the Contras ultimately blossomed into the Contra element of the Iran-Contra scandal.
That again from For the Record program number 109 from September of 1998. So note the many links to the Iran-Contra affair, the Afghan Mujahideen support effort, and note the evidentiary tributaries running to the events of 9/11-2001. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.